Breakfast at Sally's, written by Richard Lemieux. Chapter 30. The Church Mice. What sounded like a 900-pound centipede on the move aroused Willow and me from our slumber on the flowered sofa in the long hallway on the lower level of the church. It was a Monday morning, ending our fourth night of curling up in our sleeping bag somewhere warm and dry, thanks to the kindness of the pastor, Earl. Clomp, 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 clomp! The centipede got louder as it made its way down the stairway. I poked my head out from under its cover and peeked over the arm of the sofa to see a woman holding the end of a rope, followed by a dozen children, each holding on to the rope as they headed to a small playground just outside the church doorway. I snuggled back down to savor the warmth and safety of this moment, feeling very lucky. It had been a week of the worst weather most of the locals could remember. It had rained and rained and rained, the kind of rain that floods houses, washes out roads, makes streams overflow, the kind of rain that soaks you to the skin. It was the kind of weather that makes you want to tune out the world and curl up with a good book in front of a nice, blazing fire. But it was hard to keep a campfire blazing or even a book dry in a downpour like this, and a campfire was the best hope the homeless had for a fire of any kind. Willow and I had managed pretty well up to now, burrowed down in the back of the van at night with our sleeping bags. Even when it was cold, we could usually warm each other up, and when my clothes got wet, I could usually crawl into something dry and make it through the night. But the combination of being soaking wet and chilled to the bone was another thing entirely. I had no dry clothes left. Everything I owned was wet. There was no way to warm up, and no way to take care of Willow. The pastor at the Methodist church where we usually parked the van at night finally suggested I see a friend of his on the other side of town, and off we went, begging again. The pastor at the new church, Pastor Earl, took pity on Willow and me, standing there shivering and dripping on his office carpet. He had just enough emergency money to put us up for a night in a motel. So Willow and I spent that night at the motel, drying out and getting ready to face whatever was coming next. As usual, I had to smuggle her in and try to keep her quiet, and I worried the whole time that we would get caught and have to pay extra, which I didn't have, or get kicked out. Each of us had a good, hot, soapy shower and a rub down with clean towels. It was heavenly to be dry after the days of heavy rain. I spread my clothes out to dry, and we watched some TV in the comfort of clean sheets. As we lay wrapped in this cocoon, I listened to the rain beating against the window, and I prayed that the next day would dawn clear, or at least dry. Willow sighed in her sleep, and I wondered how much longer I could take care of her, living the way we did. I awoke in the morning to the sound of monotonous, continuous rain again. When it was time to leave the motel, I decided to go back to the church, First United Methodist Church, partly to say thank you for the gift of being warm and dry again, and partly to beg for some gas money. Pastor Earl invited me to sit down and talk for a bit. After he had heard my story, he not only gave me $20 for gas, he offered to let me sleep in the basement hallway of his church. We went downstairs to take a look. I haven't got enough money to pay for a motel room again, but it's still raining really hard, and I'm afraid you're going to get sick if you can't stay dry. You can sleep here, Pastor Earl said, pointing to a high back couch pushed up against the wall of a long hallway, at least for a few days, and maybe we can figure something else out. I had no idea what time it was. On Sunday, I had sold my watch, a $20 Timex, for $2, which translated into another gallon of gas for the van. But I knew it was late enough for the church people, Pastor Earl, the secretaries, and the others, to be in. Somewhere in the back of my mind, I had been hoping that Willow and I could be church mice, mostly out of sight during the day and free to roam the dark halls and large sanctuary at night. But I knew that this arrangement couldn't last long. In fact, it would probably end this morning when I climbed the stairs, rumpled, unshaven, and unbathed. In my seemingly endless months of sleeping on the streets, I knew of only one person who had slept in a church by himself overnight, and that was only because he had pneumonia and someone had taken pity on him. I was the only one who had been invited to occupy the 500,000 square feet of empty church space in town. Andy the Weed spent 17 years out in the cold. C, Gentleman Jake, and a host of others never got inside. There were reasons, I knew, undoubtedly good reasons in someone's estimation. I was pretty sure the church's insurance company wouldn't approve of this, and I was darn sure some church members would be afraid I would steal something. The pastor had obviously made a mistake in a moment of weakness. He had actually given me a key to the front door, which I expected him to ask me to return when I climbed the stairs this morning. I had nothing to give this man or his church. I certainly had no money. I had no fine voice to add to their choir. And with my faith in God gone, I had no inspirational story to tell the congregation. But maybe that was just as well. Andy had once told me as I drove him to the liquor store, "It's better to have no hope than just a little hope. A little hope just gets you thinking something good is about to happen. And when that little hope is taken away, you are worse off than before. My hope comes in a bottle." I knew Willow was awake, but she just stretched and burrowed down deeper, enjoying the warmth of the dry bag and the comfort of the soft sofa. I was reluctant to move myself. This little bit of comfort, or was it hope, allowed just enough space to let some thoughts I'd tried to keep at bay keep creeping back into my consciousness. While it had been almost a year since my trip to the bridge rail, my mind still flirted with the thoughts of the peaceful rest that only death could bring. It would only take a few minutes, less time than drinking a cup of coffee, to drown all memories and end all worries about the future. Maybe I could go to the church service on Sunday and look for someone who would take good care of Willow, someone with a big yard and a big heart, and lots of dog treats and bones and hamburgers. Willow finally began making her way from under the covers, and her head popped out by my shoulder. She immediately began to lick my face. Again, I was certain she could read my mind. I heard the big door at the end of the hall open. "A marching we will go, a marching we will go." The teacher and the children were singing as they entered, all still clinging to the rope. "Hi-ho, a derry-o, a marching we will go." As the teacher led them around the corner, one little boy at the end of the rope spotted Willow and me and turned his head. "Hi," he said in a tiny voice, the rope pulling him forward. It was time to get up. I couldn't avoid it any longer. I pushed the sleeping bag down and began to climb up. I stood up and stuffed my shirt back into my jeans. I found my shoes beside the sofa and sat back down to pull up my socks and lace my shoes. Ready at last, I hesitantly headed down the hall and began the ascent of the stairs. Willow followed right behind, hopping like a bunny rabbit up the stairs. As I reached the top of the stairs, a line of pictures in gold-painted frames caught my eye. I walked over to take a closer look. A small brass nameplate was tacked to the bottom of each painting. The first was Matthew, then Mark, Luke, and John, and then Jesus, four of the disciples and their leader. They all wore their hair long and in tangles, and their faces were etched. Really? They looked like some of the men I had been eating with daily at Sally's. The likeness of Jesus reminded me of C. I could hear the sound of laughter coming from the office down the hall. I held back, hesitant to see the people inside for fear of receiving an eviction notice, but Willow scooted past me and headed for the laughter. I had to pick up the pace to catch up with her. The little dog rounded the corner and made a beeline for the office.
"Well, look who's here," I heard a woman's voice say. "It's Willow."
There were two women in the office this morning, Miss Hara, the church secretary whom I had met the first day I stopped at the church, and another woman standing by the desk with her hands full of papers. Miss Hara was bending down petting Willow as I entered. She stood up to greet me.
"Good morning, Richard."
I smiled and sort of mumbled my greeting in return. Willow was now investigating the other woman, who said to her,
"Well, aren't you just a cute little thing?" "Richard, this is Charlene,"
said Miss Hara, as she reached over to pick up a bowl of salad from her desk. "Glad to meet you," Charlene said. "I'm another secretary around here."
She lifted a coffee cup to her lips. "It's good to meet you," I replied. I nodded to her, and then a plate sitting at the end of the counter caught my eye. It was laden with what looked like banana nut bread, perhaps even homemade. Charlene followed my glance.
"I baked that last night," she said. "Help yourself."
As I reached for a piece of the bread, she added,
"There's fresh coffee in the pot in the kitchen, too. Come on, I'll show you."
She led the way out of the office and toward the kitchen. I could smell the coffee.
"The mugs are right up here," she said,
opening a cabinet door and looking over the shelf, selecting the right one.
"Here's one with Santa Claus on it. Ho, ho, ho,"
she laughed as she handed the mug to me. I accepted the mug and poured a cup of coffee.
"Thank you so much," I said. "You're welcome," Charlene said. "You can have all you want. I'm the only one who drinks it around here during the day. You can have more nut bread, too. Miss Hara will eat maybe one piece. She eats salad all day. And Earl will only eat a piece or two."
We moved back toward the office. I gladly took Charlene up on her offer and picked up another piece of the delicious bread, all the while listening and watching for Pastor Earl. I thought I could hear him talking on the phone in his office, just adjacent to the main office, but I couldn't make out what he was saying.
"Did you see any mice downstairs last night?"
Miss Hara asked. I told her I hadn't.
"Well, there was one greeting me first thing this morning when I opened the front door," she said. "He ran across my desk, hopped down on the floor, and scurried out the door. He was kind of cute, but some people are afraid of them."
"I am,"
Charlene chimed in, shivering.
"They give me the creeps."
I smiled at Charlene's shiver and thought that the mice were just like Willow and me, seeking some place warm and dry while avoiding the predators outside. "Good morning, Richard," Pastor Earl said as he rounded the corner from his office. He was a tall man with long arms, and he wrapped them around me in a brief warm hug. Willow, who had been sitting on a chair by the office door, jumped down and scurried closer, rising up on her hind legs, using her front paws to get the big man's attention. "Good morning to you too, Willow," he said, bending down to pat the little dog on the head. "Come into my office," he said to me, turning and retracing his steps. I followed behind, wondering how this kind man was going to phrase and rephrase the admission of his mistake in allowing me to sleep in the church and let me know when I must leave. Willow stepped past me and jumped into a comfy chair.
"That must be her chair," laughed Earl, sitting down in his own swivel chair. "Hold on a second." He looked around on his old wooden desk covered with papers.
"I've got to give this to Miss Hara to put into the computer." He picked up a piece of paper, studied it briefly, and made a correction. "I'll be right back," he said. He swiveled, got up, and walked out. I surveyed the pastor's office. The back wall was full of books. There were Bibles of every kind, in large print and small, and writings of theologians deciphering every phrase of the holy books and scrolls. There were books on how to pray and when to pray. I saw a copy of "I've Got to Talk to Somebody, God." There was also a copy of Spung's "A New Christianity for a New Millennium." Tacked to the wall with a pushpin was the child's crayon drawing of a brown violin and bow, and the words to "Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star" written in blue. Below the child's drawing were two large Native American spirit webs with feathers and the beads of red, white, blue, and yellow. As I turned around in my chair, a poster on the wall caught my eye. "Do all the good you can, by all the means you can, in all the ways you can, at all the times you can, to all the people you can, as long as ever you live." I got out of my chair and walked past the desk to look out the window. I saw a picture on the far wall of a yellow duck, its webbed feet on backwards, and at the bottom was printed "Mallard Justed." Behind the old wooden deck was a print in frame and under glass. "Bach gave us God's word. Mozart gave us God's laughter. Beethoven gave us God's fire. God gave us music that we might pray without words." And leaning up against the side of the desk
was a violin case. I could hear Pastor Earl's footsteps coming down the hall, so I moved back to my chair. He bustled back into the office and sat down. "Sorry about that." It was at that moment that I really looked into his face. He had a well-trimmed beard, short hair, and soft blue eyes. His face was lightly etched with some 60-plus years of living. I thought then that whatever they call him, whether he was a minister, priest, reverend, or pastor, this soul was a man of God. This was not just a business to him, a way of making a living or passing the time for self-gratification. Here was a true believer. "How are you doing on money?" he asked. I reached into my back pocket and pulled out my wallet. "Not very good today," I said, showing him the empty folds of the worn leather. I expected him to say, "How do you expect to live on nothing today and the rest of the month?" But instead, he reached into his back pocket and opened his own wallet. He took out all his cash, a 5, then 6 ones, and he handed them to me. "Here, this might at least get you some gas." I reached out, silently and humbly accepting the gift. "How are you doing otherwise, Richard?" he asked. I lowered my eyes to my lap and folded my hands. I felt I could trust this man. He seemed to be a true friend, maybe the first true friend I had ever known, except for C. As I lifted my eyes to speak, I could feel the presence of others in the room. I turned my eyes to see Andy the Weed pulling a book from the shelf, and Karen, who had jumped from the Manette Bridge, looking out the window. Marcia, from the hospital waiting room, was beside me with a hand on my shoulder, and the lady in red who had emptied her purse and pockets for me so long ago was sitting on a chair, gently petting Willow. Andy turned toward me. "Look, Richard, no walker anymore, and I don't need a ride to the liquor store." The pastor sat silently and patiently, waiting for my answer to his question. I was sure that if I told him what I was seeing, he would think I was crazy.
"You are lucky to find this man," said Karen,
still looking out the window.
"Why don't you let your subconscious, you know, your soul, talk to his soul?"
asked the lady in red. I turned my eyes to Pastor Earl, and it happened so easily. I let him see my soul, and in that second, he seemed to understand the mistakes I had made as well as all the good I had done in life. I felt a sense of unconditional love. He reached out a hand to me, and I unfolded my hands to clasp his. "I'm okay, I guess," I said, as I began to try to answer his question in the conscious world. "It's been kind of cold living in my car." I paused. "I think maybe I'm ready to give up." He looked at me with his heart in his eyes, searching for a word that would console me. I asked my soul to talk to his. "You know the song, Pastor? He ain't heavy, he's my brother. It's from the 60s. Well, I am heavy. I see all these sayings on your walls, all your books, the people who respect and love you, your thoughts, dreams, and plans, your violin in that case. That is your identity. I have no identity. I don't want one. I had one once, and, well, it's gone now. I have no hope." "It sounds like you need hope," Pastor Earl's soul replied. "I know you want to help me, but I am too heavy for you to carry. I am a smart man. In the past year and a half, I have seen men who have been on the street 10 or 15 years, just hoping death would come gracefully in the cold of the night. I have seen the fear in the eyes of young women and children, knowing there must be just enough food, just enough cash, just enough begging to get by another day. Somehow, they go on. They are stronger than me. So my soul asks your soul, in the future, are you going to let me stay and sleep in this church?"
"I will. This is your sanctuary. And when I fail to get a home, will you help me find one?"
"I'll do my best." "And when my dog Willow gets ill, will you help me find a vet?"
"I will, and I'll hold your hand until Willow is well."
"And when I need someone to talk to in dark times, will you come listen to me and wipe the tears from my eyes?"
"I will, and I will cry with you."
"And if I ever begin dreaming again, will you dream with me?"
"Dreams do come true, Richard," his soul assured me.
All my life I worked, loved, raised children, sang songs, danced, played games, and celebrated life, my soul said. I gave to others, but now I have nothing to give you.
Oh, yes, you do, Earl's soul replied. You have the greatest gift to give me, the chance to give to you.
I pray for Richard when he goes to sleep at night, my soul said, whispering, somehow being inside and outside me at the same time. It was like I was now listening to another part of myself. He catches me praying for him, for his children and grandchildren and loved ones, and he tells me it's a waste of time, but I wait until he falls back asleep. And I pray for C, Major Baker, and, well, all the people he has met on his journey. You know, every night before he climbs into the back of the van to go to sleep, he puts a note on the dashboard that says, "If I die in my sleep and you find me, please find a good home for my dog. Her name is Willow." And most of the time, just as sleep comes, he feels sad that no one would miss him, sad that no one would come to his funeral.
Would you come to his funeral?
Only if he comes to mine first. Either way, I will be there, his soul said with a laugh. My soul laughed too.
And I get the feeling I won't be the only one there. There will be many, his soul said, with warm assurance.
Pastor Earl also assured me with real words, back in the room with the old desk and the sayings on the walls.
I've got to make a couple of telephone calls to get it totally approved, but I'm pretty sure that we can have you and Willow stay for as long as is necessary for you to find a place, he said. I can be pretty persuasive when I need to be.
He laughed that pure of heart laugh that made everyone within hearing breathe more easily.
You know, I just had an idea. Maybe you and Willow could be security guards for the church at night. We couldn't offer you any money for it because we don't have any. But we could get some food in the fridge, some milk and cereal and stuff. Willow could be the church guard dog. I smiled at the picture of my little white dog with a security dog badge hanging around her neck.
That would be great, I said, when I was able to find words at all.
I have been writing a book. Maybe I could work on it at night.
Really? What kind of a book?
Earl asked.
It's about the homeless people I have met, mostly, I said. I'm almost done with the writing, but it still needs a lot of work.
You know, my wife has always wanted to edit a book, Earl said, his blue eyes dancing. I'll run it by her tonight at dinner.
I could hardly believe how different this conversation was from the one I had imagined and dreaded.
About staying here, my voice trailed off. I'm just afraid that the people of your church may look at Willow and me as church mice.
Some will find us as cute little pets, while others will be afraid of us.
Not in this church, he replied. Anyone who gets to know you and Willow will treat you with dignity, respect, and love. Have courage, my friend.
Then I would like to thank you for being so kind to me, a stranger, I said.
For some reason, you are not a stranger to me, the tall gentleman said. You seem more like the brother I never had.
Pastor Earl let go of my hand, sat back in his chair, and then stood up.
Have you had anything to eat yet today? He asked.
Just some of Charlene's delicious banana nut bread, I said.
Well, come on. I've got to stop at the bank and get a little cash, and then I'll buy you lunch, he said, smiling.
I'm hungry.
Maybe we can talk about your book.
Earl reached over to get his coat from the back of a chair, and I slipped mine on. As we headed for the door, I looked back at Andy, Marcia, Karen, and the lady in red, and nodded. Andy put down the book he was reading and smoothed his hair back with his hand. He leaned toward the lady in red and said,
"Anybody ever tell you you look just like Vanna White?"
"No, they haven't," she blushed.
"Well, what are you doing today?" Andy asked.
"I have no plans," she replied.
That's tonight's episode. At this point, we must break off our reading. You've been hearing Breakfast at Sally's by Richard Lemieux. Copyright 2009. It is read with the permission of Skyhorse Publishing of New York. Join us next time on the bookshelf for Breakfast at Sally's. The bookshelf is produced by Vern Windham.
I'm Jeff Hazen.